Unlike the prior shooting, no video captured the shots fired in this one. Unlike the prior case, where the grand jury met 11 weeks after the incident, the grand jury was asked to consider this incident after 5 days. Unlike the prior case, in this one, the Troy Police Department's investigation had barely begun. In the prior case, the justification determination was simple. The deceased civilian was clearly visible on video, firing a weapon at an officer before another officer returned fire. That was not the case with the shooting that took Mr. Fadiman's life. The justification determination in this shooting was by no means clear. In fact, far from it. And most importantly, in this case, it was not the grand jury that cleared Sergeant French. The evidence will show that it was Joel Abeloff himself who cleared Sergeant French. By carefully constructing a grand jury presentation that fully supported a version of events wherein the shooting was clearly justified, and knowingly withholding any evidence that cast any doubt whatsoever on that carefully constructed narrative. He manipulated the evidence in a way that ensured a new true villain. And Your Honor, the defendant made his decision to clear Sergeant French 5 days out, despite evidence that said there was so much more that needed to be analyzed. He made that decision binding and permanent by conveying total transactional immunity to the prosecution on Sergeant French, the target of the grand jury's investigation. By this combination of actions inside the grand jury room on April 22nd, 2016, right here in Rensselaer County, Joel Abeloff ensured not only that the grand jury he appeared before would not indict Sergeant French, he ensured that no grand jury could ever indict him. Regardless of the evidence, a proper investigation might uncover. And again, he did it 5 days after a shooting that took a man's life. The crimes that the former district attorney is charged with took place inside the grand jury room, where instead of using the grand jury process to seek truth and promote justice, Joel Abeloff exploited the grand jury process to hide the truth and pervert justice. That is what this case is about. I want to make clear at the outset, Your Honor, the purpose of this trial is not to determine whether Sergeant French's actions were justified. The point of reference for this trial is what Joel Abeloff knew about that issue 5 days after the shooting, when he placed the matter before a grand jury and took the actions he did. And at that time, the determination of whether Sergeant French had been legally justified in ending Mr. Fadiman's life with anything but clear. No doubt, I expect you hear that Sergeant French's Troy Police Department colleagues fully believed from the beginning, 5 days out, right up until today, that the shooting was justified, even as they'll freely acknowledge that their investigation was not close to being complete 4 days after the shooting, when Joel Abeloff advised them that it was going into a jury the next day, or 5 days out, when he actually presented the case. But regardless of how those officers felt about their fellow officer, only Joel Abeloff had the power to place this matter before a grand jury. Your Honor, common sense dictates that a district attorney doesn't just blindly accept everything that anyone tells them. The same is true with the police providing the information. In fact, when a police department is investigating one of its own, should dictate that the prosecutor's sense of awareness and vigilance and skepticism might need to be heightened in case issues of confirmation bias are brought in. Issues of confirmation bias arise. But even if Joel Abelbaugh didn't feel the need to bring a heightened sense of sensitivity or analytical skills to this matter, he didn't need to, because there were so many obvious issues. As we go through the facts of this case, ask yourself if these issues would have been overlooked, ignored, if the person facing potential criminal culpability was anyone other than a police officer. After all, the evidence would show that in front of a grand jury investigating his own conduct, the defendant agreed that there is only one system of justice in Rensselaer County, and that everyone in Rensselaer County is treated the same, and that nobody, including police officers, got any special treatment from him. So let's talk about the evidence while we're here. As I mentioned, on Sunday, April 17, 2016, Sergeant French stopped Mr. Benjamin for suspicion of driving while intoxicated. After a pursuit, Mr. Benjamin's car struck a concrete barrier and was blocked in crosswise in front by Sergeant French's vehicle and Captain Montanino's vehicle from behind. Mr. Benjamin began to battle his car, and Sergeant French stepped from his. Within moments, Sergeant French had fired a total of 8 bullets through Mr. Thevenin's windshield, striking Mr. Thevenin 7 times and killing him. What happened between the time that Sergeant French stepped from his vehicle and the time that the shots were fired should have been critically analyzed and thoroughly probed. It wasn't. One day after the shooting, the Troy police chief, with the defendant standing by his side, told the media that Sergeant French shot Mr. Thevenin after Mr. Thevenin had pinned him with his vehicle. At the time of those statements, Your Honor, Sergeant French hadn't even been interviewed by the assigned detectives. But the public narrative was set that day, from the very top of the Troy Police Department down. Ask yourself as we go through this, how likely was it that any member of the Troy Police Department was going to challenge it? 4 days after the shooting, Sergeant French gave his account of what happened to the Troy Police Department detectives, and then to Joel Abelbaugh. And in Sum and Substance, which will be expanded upon greatly at trial, he said that after boxing Mr. Thevenin in his vehicle, Sergeant French got out of his patrol vehicle to confront Mr. Thevenin when, according to Sergeant French, Mr. Thevenin immediately pulled forward and struck him, pinning him up against his own vehicle by his leg. According to Sergeant French, after pushing on Mr. Thevenin's hood in an effort to free himself to no avail, he drew his weapon and shot Mr. Thevenin to save his own life. And in grand jury, 5 days after the shooting, Sergeant French told the grand jury the exact same thing. I only shot because I was pinned. The evidence will show, Your Honor, there was never an alternate theory of justification presented for people to analyze and consider, such as, I shot because I feared I would be hit. It was always Sergeant French shot after and because Edson Thevenin pinned him with his vehicle. Your Honor, as you know, shooting into a vehicle and killing the driver because the driver is crushing you is a fairly straightforward justification analysis if it happened that way. But the independent evidence
such as the physical condition of Mr. Guthrie's windshield, said it did not happen that way. To be clear, you'll hear plenty of evidence that Sergeant French was pinned at some point during the incident, and that he shot Mr. Guthrie. But the actual shooting itself was not captured on video. And the only other law enforcement witness present during the encounter, Captain Matthew Montino, was vague in his initial statements about whether Sergeant French was pinned when he fired his weapon. But Your Honor, even if Captain Montino and 10 other witnesses had been as clear as day about how the incident unfolded, and said it unfolded exactly as Sergeant French said it did, and that he was pinned when he began firing, a basic, simple, cursory glance at the pattern of bullet holes through Mr. Fenton's windshield, that alone told a different story. Because it is apparent that as the shots were fired through Mr. Fenton's windshield, Sergeant French could not have been continuously pinned. The shots covered much of the span of the windshield and indicated that at a bare minimum, Sergeant French could not have been pinned when he began firing. Rather, it is clear from the bullet holes alone that the matter didn't happen as Sergeant French said it did. There was also trajectory around that. It removed any doubt about the path of those bullets. And it might be a cliche, but in this case, a picture truly is worth a thousand words. It was abundantly clear by those photographs with bullet holes and rods placed through them that the incident did not play out the way Sergeant French claimed it did, could not have. You'll have the opportunity to review the same photographs the defendant reviewed before he put that case into grand jury, the same photographs he chose not to show the grand jury. It is simply impossible to reconcile and harmonize the windshield photographs with the very specific version of events that Sergeant French said happened as he began firing into Mr. Thevenin's windshield. Your Honor, this doesn't mean that Sergeant French was intentionally lying. It doesn't. It also doesn't mean that the shooting was automatically not justified. It doesn't. But 5 days out, the fact that the physical evidence was in conflict with the official narrative of the shooter, that needed to be probed, not hidden, not swept under the rug. Like the prior case, this was supposed to be a full and fair investigation into a serious matter with nobody getting special treatment. So how did this fact, the fact that Sergeant French's version of events didn't match the independent evidence, how did that affect the justification determination and what happened next? The evidence will show that from the defendant's perspective, it didn't change anything, because despite that irreconcilable evidence, on April 22nd, 5 days after the shooting, when the assigned Troy Police Department detective will say his investigation was not nearly completed, the defendant placed the matter in front of a Rensselaer County grand jury. Thank you, Judge. For that grand jury proceeding, the defendant presented Sergeant French to tell his version of events, completely uncross-examined by the prosecuting attorney. He said that after being immediately pinned by Mr. Thevenin, the pressure in his leg was building, the engine was revving, and the only way he could stop Mr. Thevenin from breaking his leg was to shoot him. In addition, the defendant called
Captain Montanino, Sergeant French's fellow officer. His version of events in grand jury was much less vague than it had been in his previous statements. The defendant also called five fellow officers of Sergeant French, not one of whom actually witnessed the shooting. In fact, the evidence will show that the only non-Troy Police Department witness to testify before that grand jury was the medical examiner, who testified, of course, that Mr. Thevenin died of gunshot wounds, a fact that was not in dispute, but also that Mr. Thevenin had a blood alcohol content well above the legal limit. In fact, the transcript of that grand jury proceeding will show that the defendant himself elicited as much testimony from Sergeant French about Mr. Thevenin's intoxication and his performance on field sobriety tests than he did about the shooting. He also provided ample opportunity for Sergeant French and others to provide highly sympathetic testimony and elicited evidence meant to imply that Mr. Thevenin may have been consuming marijuana that evening. He also played a video that captured Sergeant French pinned and yelling for help after the shooting, but of course didn't capture the shooting itself. Your Honor, that video was played sideways, a reflection of the hurried manner in which this serious matter, deserving a full and fair investigation, was scheduled for and placed into grand jury. But most importantly, although they were sitting right there in his file, Joel Abelov did not bother to show the grand jury a single photo of that bullet-riddled windshield. Photos that would have thrown Sergeant French's entire account into doubt. Instead, opting to provide eight photographs depicting such things as the overall positioning of the vehicles and a dent and scuff marks in Captain Montanino's front fender. The defendant's explanation for not providing the photos of the windshield, in his judgment, they weren't necessary. He said he didn't provide those photos to the grand jury as to determine whether or not Mr. Thevenin's death had been justified because the grand jury, quote, didn't need it. Now, those grand jurors, and you'll have the opportunity to hear this when the transcript is read, they actually seemed to take their duties seriously. They zeroed in, they focused on the actual issue that mattered, not if a shooting happened, but how and why. They asked several questions about where and when Sergeant French was when he was pinned. When was he pinned? The evidence will show that the defendant had at the ready in his file evidence that would have helped to answer those questions, but of course would have clouded the tidy version of events that he chose to present to a grand jury 5 days after the shooting. He chose not to present that evidence because, according to him, those photos, quote, wouldn't have provided anything to the presentation that they didn't already have. Your Honor, you don't know what you don't know. And so, with their minds completely uncluttered by any evidence that might raise questions about what had actually happened that night, the grand jury, to the surprise of absolutely no one, declined to bring any charges against Sergeant French, immediately after which the defendant's office rushed out a press release announcing Sergeant French's exoneration. As if everything I just described didn't render that grand jury proceeding nothing more than a meaningless show, a charade. As I stated previously, Sergeant French was not required to waive immunity as a condition of being able to offer his self-justifying account to the grand jury with no cross-examination whatsoever by the prosecution. The only target of a grand jury presentation was not required to waive immunity, and yet everyone is treated the same. Why, Your Honor, what motivated these acts by a public official sworn to uphold the law, whose role is to seek truth and justice? The evidence will show that this was never actually about determining what actually happened during an incident that claimed a man's life. It was never about knowing if his life had been taken without justification. The evidence will show that this was about the defendant engineering a speedy dismissal before this investigation had ever begun or could begin, and specifically before the Attorney General's office was able to review any evidence allowing for a jurisdictional determination under Executive Order 147. So what is Executive Order 147? It gives jurisdiction over certain police-involved deaths to the Attorney General's office, taking those incidents out of the hands of local prosecutors. And, Your Honor, in a twist of near perfect irony, by its very terms, Executive Order 147 was meant to address the concern or perception that civilian deaths caused by police could not be handled fairly at the local level without conflict or bias. This shooting occurred on a Sunday, Your Honor. You'll hear evidence about the Attorney General's office's interactions with the defendant after that, culminating in the hand delivery of a letter to him on Tuesday, reiterating earlier statements that the Attorney General's office needed to review actual evidence in order to determine which office had jurisdiction. If the defendant was confused before delivery of that letter, the hand delivery of that letter should have removed any ambiguities. So what was the defendant's response to receiving that letter? It was, number one, to not provide the evidence requested. Number two, to drop a letter in the old-fashioned mailbox addressed to the New York State Attorney General, received 3 days after the grand jury presentation, saying that he, Joel Abelov, had determined that the case did not fit within the executive order. And three, he quickly and surreptitiously placed this matter before a grand jury. But, Your Honor, to be clear, the defendant is not being prosecuted for those acts. They establish his motive, his intentions, but the defendant is being prosecuted for what he did in the grand jury room. And those actions in the grand jury room, the granting of immunity, the evidence presented, and more importantly, not presented, all of that would have remained hidden and secret, protected by the shield of grand jury secrecy that comes when there is no indictment returned. Nobody would have known, except that something happened that the defendant had not planned on. He acknowledged he had no way of predicting when he committed those acts. The Attorney General's office sued him, took possession of his file, obtained unsealing orders, and learned what he had done, or more specifically, what he had not done. Your Honor, as a technical matter, district attorneys have nearly complete discretion to decide what evidence to present and not to present to a grand jury. Near complete discretion as to which witnesses to confer immunity upon. Nearly. But a DA cannot use their discretion to undermine and subvert an investigation before knowing, before they could know, whether a shooting was justified. That is utterly at odds with the inherent duties of the office of a district attorney. Ask yourself, as you listen to the evidence, is withholding the most relevant evidence of a grand from a grand jury and proactively rendering its decision null and void by immunizing the target of their vote, consistent with the duties of a district attorney, which are, among other things, to seek truth, to promote justice, to not mislead bodies of a court. And when this happens in order to benefit someone, those acts constitute official misconduct. And make no mistake, Your Honor, at the time that Joel Abelov chose to do this, not looking back with the 2020 hindsight of knowing what the fallout was, but at the time he did that, Sergeant French did receive two distinct benefits. The No True Bill provided Randall French with the benefit of a public exoneration. The immunity provided him with the benefit of an insurance policy. Rather than seeking truth and promoting justice, the defendant's actions did nothing but undermine faith in the criminal justice system and a belief that everyone's treated fairly. He also blocked any chance of justice for Edson Thevenin before anyone had truly analyzed whether the matter was justified or not. And if I might add, if a proper investigation, one generally focused on getting at the truth rather than just delivering a quick whitewash, would have fairly determined that Sergeant French's actions could have been justified by law, then the defendant's actions also deprived him of the opportunity of being properly exonerated. For those reasons, Your Honor, the former Rensselaer County District Attorney sits in a Rensselaer County courtroom charged with two counts of official misconduct, one for withholding material evidence that contradicted the narrative the grand jury was asked to accept, and another for immunizing the target of the presentation, each act providing a separate and distinct benefit to Sergeant French. But it doesn't end there. Several months after the Thevenin grand jury presentation, when his own conduct became the subject of a grand jury investigation, and the defendant opted to testify on his own behalf, which he did on October 27, 2017, after, I might add, waiving immunity. Listen carefully to the defendant's own words before the grand jury, because they evolve each time he's challenged, until ultimately he lands on, "I'm the district attorney, I have discretion, period." And during that testimony, as Mr. Abelov struggled to justify his defense to immunize, his decision to immunize Sergeant French in the Thevenin matter, he suddenly pivoted and instead tried to normalize it by telling the grand jurors that another prosecutor in his office had done the exact same thing he did. He said that another prosecutor had allowed another officer to testify in grand jury as the target of the presentation without waiving immunity. The evidence will show that the defendant attempted to leave the grand jury with the impression that this was somehow not unprecedented, that this was somehow normal discretionary conduct in Rensselaer County. But that was a lie. Not only did the police officer waive immunity in the prior case, but Joel Abelov sat in the grand jury room and watched as he did so. The evidence will show that the defendant didn't misremember this. He lied about it in an attempt to minimize the significance of his own conduct. And so, in addition to two counts of official misconduct, the defendant sits in a Rensselaer County courtroom charged with one count of perjury as well. All three counts against him relate in different ways to misleading Rensselaer County grand jurors. Your Honor, taken together, this evidence, what I've just described, and plenty more, will demonstrate, I suggest inescapably, that the former district attorney of Rensselaer County is himself guilty of the crimes with which he's charged. 2 counts of official misconduct and 1 count of perjury in the first degree. Thank you.